I think people get shocked that I started SocoGlam with no expertise in skincare beauty. I wasn't a professional makeup artist or an esthetician before. I literally did not have a skincare routine. I washed my face with a bar of soap.
Welcome to Crazy Smart Asia, the unexpected stories of Asia's disruptors. I'm your host, Chong Xiao Wei. Every week, we talk with a young leader about the crazy smart approaches they're taking to achieve success and the truths they uncover along the way. Seven mega companies own your entire beauty regimen. Estee Lauder Companies, L'Oreal, Unilever, Procter & Gamble, Shiseido, Johnson & Johnson, and Coty. So how do you create a beauty brand that not only breaks through that glass ceiling, but sets the trends for the big players? How do you connect new customers in new markets with products and practices they're unfamiliar with? And how do you straddle a migrant identity while building a global business? Joining us to share the answer is Charlotte Cho, the Korean-American founder of global K-beauty brands SocoGlam and Then I Met You. On exporting K-beauty in Asia out to America and the rest of the world, this is our conversation. Welcome to Crazy Smart Asia, Charlotte Cho. It's so good to have you here. How are you doing today?
Good. I'm really excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
So we're going to kick off with some quick fire questions. Can you describe what you do in one sentence?
Yes. I'm Charlotte Cho, the founder of Then I Met You, and also the co-founder of the skincare platform called SocoGlam.
Cool. So can you share with us the number of steps in your personal skincare routine?
I have about 5 to 6 steps. After becoming a mom, I like to keep things simple.
So no 10 steps.
Well, there's a time and place for 10 steps and there's a time and place for 5 to 6 steps.
Okay, your favorite beauty product or device? Something you can't live without.
It would have to be the Then I Met You Living Cleansing Balm.
All right. So what is your favorite beauty tip?
My favorite beauty tip is to layer your essence maybe 4 to 5 times to lock in that hydration.
Ooh, okay.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
So let's start at the beginning, Charlotte. I want to set some context for our listeners before we get into the meat of your story. So you were born and raised in California to South Korean immigrant parents who ran a liquor store. You moved to Korea post-university to work in PR. And then you went back to the US, to New York, where your husband was attending business school. But before you actually moved back to the US, you launched SocoGlam with him, right? With Dave?
Mm-hmm.
Which eventually became the number one retailer of Korean skincare products in the US. Mm. What was your childhood like?
Well, growing up in California, I didn't have a lot of Koreans around me. I was part of the suburban community that just didn't really have a lot of Korean people to look up to. And also just all around me in terms of the media exposure that I had. I mean, I opened up a magazine. There's no one that looks like me. There are no role models on TV. So it was in that way an existence where I felt that I didn't quite see that I could be anything else other than maybe occupations that my parents thought that, you know, I could be, like a doctor or a lawyer, the typical kind of Korean immigrant dream.
Yeah.
It was just not many examples and role models to look up to.
Mm. And were there any formative experiences as first-gen Korean American, right, that shaped you as an adult today?
Yeah, I grew up just knowing a little bit about my Korean background and roots. Mm-hmm. But again, because I didn't have any role models or people to look up to, I never really wanted to dive deep into the culture until I was in college.
Mm-hmm.
And I also rejected a lot of things that my parents or my mom tried to teach me about Korean skincare culture. You know, she told me a lot about using SPF or, you know, cleansing my skin. And I was like, skincare is for old people. And it was the culture around me that didn't really support those lifestyle habits.
Yeah.
My friends around me were certainly not taking care of their skin either.
Mm.
And everything around me in terms of the media was all about makeup. And so I did not know that there was so much to learn about Korean culture. And once I moved there, I was just blown away because the fashion was incredible, the street fashion. Creativity in Korea in terms of even just the cafes and the way they present themselves in like a retail setting, and the consumer products were so unique and cute and distinguished and differentiated. I felt very at home moving and living in Korea, even though I never was curious about it my entire childhood and my young adult life.
So what was your definition of skincare when you were younger?
It was a chore. You know, I had acne growing up, and it was just always like, oh, how do I get rid of this? And I felt like it was expensive. I would describe it as something that was daunting. You know, the only way you really got products was like going to a department store counter and seeing all these expensive bottles of toner that I didn't really get the use of them, but I felt like I should buy it, but it was out of reach as well because it was so expensive.
Yeah.
It wasn't fun. It felt like definitely something that I felt forced into and a chore. And no one around me seemed to know what it did either. So a lot of lack of education and a lot of confusion.
Yeah. So you also decided to start your own business, right? When you moved back to the US, you actually deep dive into launching Soko Glam. But what were your thoughts seeing your parents work as immigrant parents living in the US?
My parents were definitely hard workers. They definitely taught me the importance of being very scrappy and resourceful and just making things happen, even though the conditions are not set up for you to succeed. I mean, the fact that they were able to have a successful business without speaking the language, I'm sure dealing with a lot of things like racism and just not the same opportunities as someone who may have lived there for, you know, a long time. They had to just go with the flow and roll with the punches. And so as I was building Soko Glam, I definitely thought back to my parents a lot, thinking, you know, when I face a certain challenge, I mean, if my parents were able to handle challenging circumstances with far less support and far less resources, then I can do it and I can figure it out myself.
So let's talk a little bit about your time in Korea. When you moved to Korea, you have never lived there before. Was it difficult to assimilate when you moved to Korea?
Yeah, I was. As much as I loved it and I was blown away by all the skincare culture and how cute and fascinating everything was, I was also just in a culture shock too. I just didn't understand why certain things were done, you know, in the way that I never experienced. And part of me rejected that and rebelled against that. When I was working at Samsung, they had certain areas where people would be kind of smoking, but it was taboo at the time for women to smoke. But, you know, I didn't smoke, but I felt like that's not fair. You know, the American in me was like, there's kind of a gender disparities here. And I was like rebelling against those kind of things.
So on Crazy Smart Asia, we like to talk about aha moments. The moment that changed everything and set our guests on the path that they are on today. What would you say was your aha moment? When did it happen?
There's so many aha moments throughout my journey. I mean, it's been 11 years since I started Soko Glam, so I feel like I continue to have those aha moments. And even with Then I Met You as well. And I think that one of my aha moments was creating my own creation for the best Korean skincare products. I didn't think that anyone other than my friends would actually be shopping on Soko Glam because it was a personal project. It was not meant to be business.
It was a passion project.
It was a
right?
passion side project that I thought I would do something on the weekends with. And once the New York Times wrote about it and Daily Candy and all these other publications start writing about Soko Glam, I saw a surge in people visiting the site. We sold out many times over. And when I saw the names of the customers coming through, I noticed that the majority of them were not Asian. And that was a big aha moment where I was like, oh, I didn't know that this would be speaking to the non-Asian American community. And I got really excited about that fact. It was the tip of the iceberg, I think. And, you know, fast forward even a couple years down the journey of Soko Glam, I just saw the entire US embrace Korean skincare and Korean beauty in a faster rate than I ever thought possible.
So you took a quintessentially Asian product, which is Korean beauty, and exported it to America, one of the biggest markets in the world, and you actually found success with it. So many of our listeners will be thinking how they would love to be able to do something similar as what you've done, or apply their lived experience or cultural traditions to build a business just like you did. What's your advice for someone who's looking to export out to create a new market and sell to a completely different customer base? What would be your tip or your advice?
I would say go for it. Simply go for it. And I think that one of the biggest challenges of starting Sokolam was thinking, how could I possibly change the mindset of American consumers to embrace Korean beauty? Brands they've never heard of, products they've never heard of, application methods and ingredients that they may be not used to. How can I get them to embrace a lifestyle that involved cleansing their face twice when they weren't even cleansing it once? And this is one of my favorite quotes, you know, it's from Nelson Mandela. It always seems impossible until it's done. And I think if I had been too risk averse or afraid of that type of challenge, I would have never really thought to start something like Sokolam, but I did. And here I am now, 11 years later, seeing that change happen so quickly that now beauty innovation is synonymous to Korean beauty.
So what would you say has been the biggest struggle that you've faced since starting Sokolam and then I met you?
Yeah, I think that there are so many struggles and challenges. It's hard to pick one. I think the mindset shift of getting people to accept a whole new category and a whole new way of taking care of your skin. I mean, people in America were far into makeup, but not skincare. They didn't really understand the concept of taking care of your skin and taking delight in it. So starting from the ground up, it was about changing their mindset. So that was a big challenge. I also think that because I didn't come from an e-com background, I didn't come from a traditional beauty background as well. It was all pretty new to me. There was a challenge of starting from scratch and learning as fast as I could and wearing many hats. I think getting my esthetician license was very crucial because a lot of Korean beauty was built on the success of skincare education. And being able to speak about that deeply and intelligently really helped Sokolam grow and also created that credibility as well. I also wrote the Little Book of Skincare after I got my esthetician license, and that helped tremendously to get that point of view and perspective across. I think that begging Korean brands in the beginning to join Sokolam was a big challenge because at first we were such a small brand. They're, you know, the reputable Korean brands that have been in the market for a long time were saying, what is Sokolam? You know, who are you? And once I started to prove myself with getting a lot of media exposure, storytelling to a U.S. audience, and the U.S. audience falling in love with their brand or products really helped them kind of change their mind. And luckily, within a few years, instead of me begging Korean brands to join Sokolam, it was the reverse, where many Korean brands were hoping to get onto the Sokolam platform.
So how much would you say of business success do you think is luck, and how much of it do you think is skill?
I would say that with my personal experience, because I think everyone will answer it differently, is 90% luck and 10% hard work. Because I think with skill, it can be learned, but you just have to work hard at it. I don't think I'm naturally gifted at speaking or naturally gifted at, you know, talking about skincare. I just think it took practice and it took time, and also took just that natural passion. And the community that really fell in love with Sokolam and then I met you, I think they are attracted to the authentic passion I have for skincare and seeing people's lives transform with skincare when I give them advice. I think that is so fulfilling, and luckily that translated well to others.
So can you explain a little bit more about that 90% luck? Why would you say it's 90% luck?
I think the timing of it all. I mean, when it came to Korean beauty, it's not like Korean beauty is a new concept. It was thriving and existing in Korea. And there were some brands that were in the US. They were in these Korean supermarkets, largely based in immigrant communities. They were there. They're existing. They didn't have the proper English translation on the labels. No one was speaking about it in a mainstream way. But I think perfectly timed with my introduction to Korean beauty, my exposure to it, and then moving back to the US and speaking about it from my perspective, I think that has a lot to do with timing. People were willing and ready to listen. And then I can't help but give credit to K-pop, you know, the phenomenon of K-pop and Korean dramas and the media powerhouse that Korea is, also supporting the kind of philosophy of taking care of your skin, glowing skin, you know, all these actors and actresses and K-pop stars. That does help definitely showcase the lifestyle that people emulate and want to have. So I think that global phenomenon of Hallyu and Korean culture has definitely been such a great part of the Korean beauty wave as well.
Do you think that's the reason why people love Korean skincare and beauty so much? Do you think that's why it's so sticky?
I think it's sticky because of so many reasons. Specifically for Korean beauty, there's so many accessible price points. There's, yes, the high end, but then there's also things that are more prestige and mass that are just as high quality.
Yeah.
And that made skincare very democratic. People of all age groups and budgets and lifestyles could take part in Korean beauty.
Yeah.
I love the fact that Korean beauty is hyper-focused on innovation, having snail mucin and different textures that have different delivery systems, essences that were not really a category at all in the West, were, you know, are a staple in Korea. With acne treatments, it's not about harsh chemicals and harsh treatments that dry out your skin. It's about really gentle hydrocolloid patches.
Mm.
There's a lot of innovation that spoke to people, and most importantly, they worked. It's not innovation that was gimmicky, but people saw results, and it's sticky when it actually works.
Yeah. And you also mentioned something along the lines of there's a lot of education when it comes to Korean beauty, right?
Yeah, I think having a PR background really helped me become the spokesperson for Korean beauty in the West, because I was able to speak about how you apply the product, how it works best, what is the innovation behind it.
Mm.
And people were willing to listen because so much of the skincare in the West was just very basic.
Mm.
Almost the things that your mom or your grandma used was still what was popular, and there was no newness. And I think Korean beauty really pushed the envelope of innovation, and it almost caused a lot of Western companies to be like, oh, wait, we need to catch up.
Yeah.
We've been pushing out the same product for years, the same formula for years and years, and resting on our laurels. And I think Korean beauty really made them rethink and re-strategize and also start innovating.
Mm.
Actually, a lot of American and Western brands formulate in Korea now because that's where all the best factories are.
Really? Oh, that's interesting. So aside from Soko Glam, your online marketplace, we also talked a little bit about your beauty brand, which you launched in 2018 called Then I Met You.
Mm-hmm.
After five, almost 6 years, it's about to hit the shelves at Sephora across Southeast Asia and Hong Kong this April. So congratulations.
Thank you.
How nervous are you about the launch?
It's a full circle moment for sure. I never imagined that I would be able to have my own perspective on skincare translated across my own line and then now distributed all throughout Asia.
Mm.
And for those of you who are new to Then I Met You, this line is a premium skincare line that celebrates Korean beauty rituals.
Mm.
And it also focuses on very sensorial textures. And I love the fact that it's a marriage between Korean beauty and also my American esthetician background.
Mm.
So it fuses both of those worlds, just like I'm Korean American.
Mm. When you say sensorial experience, what would that be?
Well, when you look at our Living Cleansing Balm, our bestseller and Holy Grail, it has this sorbet-like texture that is unlike any other cleansing balm you'll ever experience.
Mm.
And it feels like butter on the skin. It melts seamlessly. Once you emulsify, it turns this very nice milky texture. And then when you wash it off, it doesn't leave a film on your face. It does.
Sounds good.
it looks good enough to eat, honestly.
Wow.
You'll see when you try. I don't know if you've tried it already. Oh, okay.
Not yet.
And then our Bong Bong Bounce Cream, which is our newest launch, that also has this amazing texture. It's very lightweight, but deeply hydrating. And it's coming from the extracts of halibongs that are grown in Jeju, Korea.
Yeah.
So you see the influence of Korean culture in all of the products. And when you look at our Giving Essence, it has the traditional fermented base, but also has 5% niacinamide infused in the essence, which is almost like a serum on its own.
Mm.
And it fuses that Korean essence plus the American side, where it's just really effective active ingredients all in one.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
So tell me the story about the name, Then I Met You. Yeah. What does it mean? How did it come about?
You know, a lot of people say that Then I Met You sounds like it's the name of a Korean drama. I have to say I am highly influenced by Korean dramas.
Really?
But really, I wanted it to evoke a sense of emotion.
Mm.
I think that Korean people are very emotional. When people ask me what I took away from my 5 years living in Korea, I say I learned two things. One is skincare, and the second is chang. Mm. And chang is a big part of Korean culture. It is something that they talk about always, and they always relate to it and speak about it, even in Korean dramas. If you listen closely, they reference chang a lot. Chang is a word that is hard to describe, even if you're Korean, because it's a feeling. It's a feeling of a deep and emotional connection you could have with someone or something. And I think it's a beautiful part of Korean culture. And I wish to always remind myself to build that type of deep connection with others. I actually wrote a book about it. It's called The Little Book of Chang. And I wanted and was motivated to write that book because it's such a beautiful part of Korean culture. It's so hard to explain.
Mm.
And it's also something that's disappearing, not only in the U.S., but also I feel like in Korea as well.
How so?
I think that this deep connection you have, it must be nurtured and it must be worked on. You have to take time to build it. You have to meet with people face to face, have lunches and dinners, be vulnerable. There's all these things that will lead to chang, but I think slowly, just the culture nowadays is slowly stripping away with those moments.
Mm.
People are online. People are more used to text messages than actual phone conversation style. It's almost weird when a friend calls you.
Yeah.
And that's strange,
it's
right?
It's almost like suspicious.
Yeah.
Why is she calling me? Right?
Did something bad happen?
Yeah.
You know, why is it that, you know, we're already now living very social media driven lives that focus on the positives rather than the vulnerable? And so I think that there's an element missing in building deep connections now, because in order to have deep connection with someone, you got to see all sides. You got to see the good side and the bad side. And unfortunately, all we have left are the good sides or the staged sides of us that prevents us from getting deeper with others. So I think it's so important to build that chang, especially in this, you know, post-COVID society, especially with so many platforms and apps that we portray our lives in. And I think it's sad that in Korea, where I think chang is really strong, is slowly disappearing too, based on what I see and based on what my Korean colleagues and, you know, Korean native friends say.
So you said that it's very difficult to describe what chang is, even as a South Korean, right? What was the most difficult part about writing the book? Because you had to write about it.
Yeah, my first book, Little Book of Skincare, took 6 months to write, and The Little Book of Chang took me 5 years. Yes, it is very difficult to describe chang, and that's why it took me 5 years to write. And I think that luckily, I have experiences in my life and anecdotes that clearly describe and articulate the feeling and and how I was able to build chang with others that hopefully come across in the book. I think that, first of all, I believe that one key way of nourishing chang is to simply break bread together and have a meal together.
Mm.
And when I was working at Samsung, I was a typical American that thought that at lunchtime, I'm going to eat by myself, or I'm going to go off to a restaurant and pick something up real quick, eat at my desk. And actually, that's quite the culture still in the U.S. today. That's office culture. And in Korea, I was just shocked that every lunch, I would always eat with my team, no matter what.
Oh.
And also at dinner, we would also share a lot of dinners together. There's something called hwaesik in Korea. It's like called company dinners where you would eat with them. You'd have drinks with them. And just seeing my colleagues at work, both for lunch and dinner and breaking bread and getting to talk to them outside of the work environment really helped me establish and build chang with them. And it was to the point where if you didn't join for lunch, they thought something was wrong. Like, are you sick? What's going on? And I think that's something special to be able to build that deep connection and talk about things outside of work, see what makes each other tick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do they work better? And also, you could even blow off some steam. Like, if you have an issue with a colleague and you're drinking a few shots of soju, you get to kind of air out that frustration in a way that's very honest and transparent versus keeping it bottled up and, you know, maybe people talking behind each other's backs. And it's very transparent culture where you just like lay it all out. And I like that.
Interesting. Yeah.
Because how are you going to get past those grievances unless you really are honest with one another?
Mm. So going back to Then I Met You and the story behind it. So in a recent post on Instagram, you also said that you could have 50 products by now, nearly 6 years into the brand's existence, but you only have 9 products. Can you share a little bit more about the thought process behind the brand's product development and why you decided to be really strict with the number of products that you have?
Yeah, I just want to make sure that Then I Met You is built with intention, just like the concept of Chong. And that's why Chong is the ethos of the brand is you want to build deep and meaningful connections and you want to go deeper. So you got to meet your friend for multiple coffees and lunches and dinners and be vulnerable. I think with skincare, it's similar. I want to go deeper with ingredients, deeper with the formulation. I don't want to churn out a run-of-the-mill product that's on the shelf that you just slap your label on it.
Yeah.
It's about building formulas from scratch with specific goals and intentions for each step. And so I launched Then I Met You with the double cleanse, with the cleansing duo, which features a living cleansing balm and the soothing tea cleansing gel. And I put so much intention behind it. It's still the number one best-selling product, the living cleansing balm plus as a duo, the two products together. And I'm not pressured to create more newness for the sake of newness, which I think a lot of brands these days must create newness to survive.
Yeah.
For me, I'm not backed by VC. It's all self-funded. So I'm not pressured by any outside forces to create newness for the sake of increasing revenue. And so I like that I could create with my own terms.
Mm.
And that means I don't have a deadline for a product launch.
Yeah.
I don't have to create something because I have a product calendar that says I must launch by this date because I want to make sure it's perfect. And so I think that intentionality has really spoken to the Then I Met You community. Our fans really get excited when we launch something new because they know that it's not forced. And I think that that's why we're able to succeed 6 years later. I truly believe that we've grown at the pace that we need to grow. And it is causing excitement, you know, in Asia, in the UK. You know, we will be launching at another retailer as well in a bigger way later this year. And so it's exciting to see that development. And it's rare, I think, to see that intentionality.
Yeah. So you said that you bootstrapped for Then I Met You and the same for Soko Glam, right? Are there any intentions eventually to raise VC money?
At the current moment, we don't need to because we are profitable. But of course, if we change our strategic goal to that would require those funds, if we have a certain goal in mind, then of course we are very open to it.
Okay. But as you go about your K-beauty routine before you sleep every night, are there specific matters that keep you up at night about your business or used to make you lose sleep over?
I think one of the things that keep me up at night or used to keep me up at night was just like navigating work in a post-COVID world.
Mm.
You know, we went into total remote work status for a couple years. But then we finally made the decision this year to come together as a company to do more of a hybrid work model. And I think there's a lot of resistance in the beginning, but, you know, just seeing people, the creative juices flowing, more conversations and just being able to touch and feel the product as a group and just be able to meet each other face to face again has been really great. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes even for someone who wrote about Chong and talking about the importance of meeting face to face and making those deep connections in person, I almost forgot about that and the power of that. So kind of making a decision, you know, to come together as a company and meet more regularly in office has done wonders for us as a team.
Has there been any like a big mistake that you made that you still think about, but has been pivotal to your journey with either Soko Glam or Then I Met You?
There's so many mistakes that I've made or things that I regretted, but with Then I Met You, when we launched the line, we decided strategically not to launch on Soko Glam because it's its own brand with its unique story and it deserved to be standing on its own 2 feet on its separate site versus being on Soko Glam from the very get-go and then just being seen as a private label of Soko Glam because it wasn't. There's so much more to Then I Met You that I wanted to share. And people thought we were crazy because they thought, you're not going to have your own skincare line on your own platform that has hundreds of thousands of people going to visit and discover skincare monthly.
Because it makes a lot of sense, right?
Yeah. And I'm so glad we didn't because we really had the time and space to let it stand on its own 2 feet and people to discover the line as it is. And eventually we did get onto Soko Glamin and became the number one brand on Soko Glamin and still today. So there's no harm in doing it the difficult way if it makes sense and you have a special goal in mind. Mm. It's going to be harder, but you know, you will reap the benefits of it long term. I truly believe that.
So people often talk about the emerging trends that they're super excited about, right? Especially when it comes to beauty. Mm. But what do you think is one skincare or beauty trend that you think absolutely needs to end right now?
I think one beauty trend that needs to end now is the whole clean beauty trend.
Mm. Interesting.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of greenwashing or fear-mongering. It's based off of brands that are trying to use that as a way to differentiate their products. But actually, clean has no definition. So every brand will have their own interpretation and definition of clean.
There is no set definition, right?
Across and the board. I think it caused a lot of people to believe in misleading facts about skincare and get kind of scared of ingredients that they don't need to be scared about. Like certain preservatives are wonderful for your skincare routine and are necessary. But then consumers are taught that it's actually bad for you or that it's not as clean. So they try to avoid it. But then you're actually perpetuating kind of a lie and it's misleading. Okay. So I think clean beauty just became an out of hand kind of trend.
Is there a quirk about the industry, like the beauty industry in particular, that you wouldn't know unless you're inside?
Yeah, I think there is actually a low barrier to creating skincare products. Because there are manufacturers that will sell you off-the-shelf formulations that you literally can slap your label on it and sell it. And so innovation is very rare because not many people are creating products from scratch.
Mm.
So that's the quirk about an industry that I think most people don't realize. That's why I challenge myself to never create something or create something that's just off-the-shelf. And I will go from the very beginning to make something innovative and different. Because I think that in order for a brand to truly succeed, you can't borrow from another person's playbook.
Yeah.
You have to set your own path and be distinguished and differentiated in your own way. Otherwise, why do you exist?
Yeah. You have to differentiate yourself.
Be out of the box. I mean, literally Soko Glam. Why did it succeed? No one else was doing
it. Don't be someone else.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So don't obsess over your competitors because you doing what your competitors are doing is not going to help you or serve you in any way. You could keep tabs on them and see what they're doing, but you know, it's always more flattering when they copy you.
Oh, yeah. That's the best.
And let them copy you because, again, they're not differentiated. They're just following in your footsteps. So they're never going to succeed in that way.
Oh, I like that. So this show is all about the unexpected stories of people that we may not know about. What do people not know or find surprising about you or your journey so far?
I think people get shocked that I started Soko Glam with no expertise in skincare beauty. I wasn't a professional makeup artist or an esthetician before. I literally did not have a skincare routine. I washed my face with a bar of soap. And I think that is a relatable part of my story because with A Little Book of Skincare, you know, I wrote it in the perspective of I did not have a routine. I learned about it at age 22 and I became an expert. And now I'm a very confident skincare user and consumer of skincare products, and you can too. Mm. And so that is very relatable, I think.
What do you think is something that you thought to be true 5 years ago that you know now is not true?
I think that there is an allure and there is a blue light towards raising capital that you think is so sexy and desirable. You see all these media stories glorifying founders that have raised a certain amount of money for their businesses, and they're celebrated for raising that amount.
Mm.
But if you actually see the progression of many of these brands and companies that have raised a crazy amount of money are not even existing today.
Mm.
And so raising the amount of capital does not equal success because the bill is actually coming. When you raise that money, you think that it's not free money. The bill is coming. It's going to cause you to make decisions that you may not want to make as a founder. It's going to make you rely on money to grow the business when sometimes you need to grow organically, or it's more relatable to the community when you take out of the box ideas that are not necessarily tied to money that will help you grow your brand in a more authentic way.
Mm.
I think skincare is one of those things that should not be viewed as like a tech company. or an app that you can throw money at it to see this, the base grow, the community or the base or the customer base grow. Mm. It's a very personal brand. You know, it's like a community driven brand and you can't throw money at it to solve that problem. So I think that's one thing that may seem super celebrated, but I think people are starting to realize, well, wow, they raised that much money. They're not even here today. Mm. So money doesn't solve all the problems for a founder or a brand.
Yeah, that's a conversation to be had, actually. You work with your husband, Dave. What is it like working with your partner?
Oh, yeah, it's tough. We got married the same year that we started SocoGlam. And we not only operate SocoGlam together, but, you know, he's a big part of That I Met You as well. And it's tough. But there's no one that you trust more than your own partner because you all have kind of the similar goals, right? And you're aligned in that regard. And so that being aligned is the number one important thing in order to march to the same beat and the same path and journey. Versus like if you were have a founder that's not in your family, then you might have different perspectives on what success is and where you want the journey to take you.
And how do you set boundaries between work and personal? Or are there boundaries at all?
Honestly, in the beginning, we were workaholics and we talked about work all the time. And we're like, you know, we need to set some boundaries. Let's like try to make it an effort to not talk about work at dinner and, you know, on the weekends. But you know what? We realized that that was futile because we love what we do. And it's such a big part of who we are. And as founders, I don't think you can really cut it out so seamlessly. Mm. So we have just resigned to the fact that we're going to always talk about work. But I think one thing that has changed in recent years is having our first daughter 3.5 years ago.
Yeah.
Has forced us to try to strike a better balance. Mm. Because we don't want to talk about things that worry us or things that are big decisions for business while we're trying to talk to a toddler.
Yeah.
You know, first of all, we're so distracted. We can't have an intelligent conversation. And secondly, it's just not something that we want to bring into the vibe of the, or the tone of the, of like the evening, right? We want to focus on her and not the business. And we want to focus on what she created that day in school or, you know, things that are important to her, not to us.
Mm. What would be one thing as a founder that you wish people would talk more about? Mm.
I think that founders should really have a support group because it is very lonely to be a founder. And I think there's a lot of portrayals on social where that it's so, you know, glamorous to be a founder of your own company and to be an entrepreneur, but there's actually so many more hard times, I think, than the glamorous ones.
Yeah.
And so having a support group, having other founders to talk about those challenges in a safe space is very needed. It's almost like your own little therapy session. And I found that I have a lot of support from other beauty founders that I've been leaning on over the years, and it's been very, very helpful in my journey. Mm.
Thank you so much, Charlotte, for joining us on Crazy Smart Asia. It's been a great conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Money doesn't solve all the problems for a founder or a brand.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.